You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. The statewide community project California Speaks, based here at KALW, recently asked listeners this question. How has the opioid crisis affected your community and what should be done about it? Well, we heard from a range of people, intimate stories, deeply exploring tragedies and solutions, and we wanted to share some of them at length with you today. We'll start with a call we got from a man named Don in L.A.
Yeah, calling from a sober living, intensive outpatient treatment program. Yeah, pretty much everything I see, the worst devastation that I see is from opioids. It's mostly alcohol and pills to heroin. All the kids, man, they're all starting with Xanax. They're all starting with Klonopin and, you know, Oxys or whatever the hell, these pills, and they're finding quicker ways to ingest them and get a faster and harder rush, and it's really devastating. I don't know if they're just prescribed more. I don't know how these substances are getting out in the quantities and in the ways that they are. I really, like, it's shocking. I've been doing this, that, and the other thing since I was 15 years old. Used to steal Vicodin and Xanax and Percocet and stuff from our parents when we were kids. But it never was like this. I mean, not to this, to, you know, epidemic point. The other thing, I mean, the thing that I see mostly, because kind of in my cup of tea, is more the uppers, like crystal meth and cocaine and stuff like that. So I haven't really paid attention to the other side of the spectrum, but I do notice when people die, these blackout sort of comas that have now become part of my vocabulary are frightening. I didn't know that that was something, that a blackout was actually an event that occurs longer than a night. You know, I always imagine a blackout being someone passing out and waking up the next morning, when in actuality a blackout is someone going into a zombie state for up to a week and possibly going into a coma. And that seems to be happening a lot, which leads to, you know, take your pick, car accidents, rapes, whatever. Yeah, something needs to be done. There needs to be more education, I think, because these kids, just like I did, you know, they just don't take it seriously enough. I think there just needs to be more education. It needs to be real. It needs to be heartfelt, not from a textbook or, you know, I mean, what's helped me in my current situation is just hearing people with their stories, you know, real stories from real people. There needs to be more of that, like, you know, earnest education. But something needs to be done, because this can't be overlooked anymore. All right, thank you.
That was Don calling in from L.A. Here's another perspective on the opioid crisis.
My name is Josh. I'm calling from San Francisco. The nightmare of the opioid crisis leapt out of the front pages and into my life about 3 weeks ago. A dear friend of mine had been given a party drug after work on that Thursday night. He probably thought it was ecstasy or something. He's not at all the type who would use any sort of opioid. Anyway, it was cut with fentanyl. Apparently, he died immediately. The waves of sorrow have mostly ebbed at this point for me, although they are moving through the extended community of people who loved him, and I am afraid to imagine the experience of his family and his nieces who love him so much. This is a national crisis on the scale of AIDS or Vietnam, where young lives are robbed from us in front of our eyes. Robbed from us in the most horrifying way. And the pure truth of it is that this is a crisis of policy. The drug itself might as well be a virus or a bullet. It doesn't matter. What produces the casualties is policy. What produces the casualties are lying corporations that know the drugs are addictive and market them anyway. What produces the tragedies are failed government policies like our farcical war on drugs, our double standards around illegal versus legal drugs that create black markets and gangs that cross international borders and make money for private prisons and create impoverished and desperate criminalized classes that can be scapegoated and targeted by law enforcement and politicians while the real criminals get fat paychecks and well-funded re-election bids.
That was Josh. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. And we also heard from a local physician.
Oh, hi. My name is Jason. I'm calling from San Francisco. And I just wanted to comment on the opioid crisis. I personally have had several extended family members who have been tragically affected by opiate addiction. I'm also a doctor that works in a hospital. And I would say that both inpatient and outpatient docs do bear some responsibility in contributing to the opiate crisis over the past 20 or so years. People ask me, you know, why are you guys so quick to prescribe opiates, or especially in the past, why have you been so quick to do it? And I think the answer is we want to help people who are suffering in pain. And especially in the past, opiates were a quick and easy way to do that. And I think we were probably somewhat blind to the consequences of what we are doing. I also think that there were elements of medical practice that made it easy for us to do things like prescribing these opiates on such a widespread basis. And one of those things, I think, was having drug reps. I remember in medical school that drug representatives, these are representatives from pharmaceutical companies, would buy all the medical students and residents lunch, and then while we were eating, they would come in and tell us about the newest pharmaceuticals that they had, and these included opiates. In clinics, they would give free samples, and so it was, you know, definitely a vulnerable time, both in our training and in our everyday work. And it was very easy to be influenced by that. And I think that things are being done in the medical community to decrease opiate use. Some of these things include non-opiate pain controls for patients that are coming out of the operating room. This means like using intravenous Tylenol, using nerve blocks, and in the clinic using things like acupuncture, non-narcotic types of medications, and even alternative therapies like CBD, which is a derivative of marijuana. I think the state has also helped with new prescription pads. There's a database now that tracks patients through different medical settings to see if they're shopping for opiates. And I think in a lot of medical groups and medical communities, there have been policies set to limit the amount of opiates that can be prescribed by the ER. And there's also limits on sales by drug representatives, pharmaceutical representatives. And I think these are all good things, and we need more of this. We need to make it easy to do the right thing and hard to do the wrong thing. And I think there also needs to be more widespread, systematic limits on pharmaceutical representative sales. So those are just my two cents. Thanks. Bye.